Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is Investor Resources live radio program, meaning it's not recorded. So you can call in. There's a magic number to make that happen, 800-465-8770. America listens to Fox News, and they should be listening to us, too. But unfortunately, we don't get the same kind of coverage. But for those of you who have called in and told me how much you like listening to the program this week, I mean, I was overwhelmed with how many calls we got. That was really reassuring that
really
we
nice,
are encouraging you and educating you on what's going on in the market and some of the issues that can be difficult to wrap your head around when it comes to, should I worry about this or should I go back to sleep issues? And there's plenty of those. You got to make a decision every day. You want some help with that decision today in this next hour. It is 800-465-8770 to ask your question. We do have a webinar scheduled for April 2nd. You can register on our website at irradio.com. IRIradio.com. Well, when we deal with the market, one of the things that is certain is that it has more risk than leaving your money in the bank. However, of late, there's been some question about that. What's the biggest risk of all?
That's an excellent question. People are always looking for that. What do we need to be the most concerned about? If we're going to concentrate on something, what should it be?
Well, most everybody has some kind of answer. Often in the market, it's saying, well, losing money, that's a risk. Yes, but you know, that's pretty broad. The biggest issue, however, is not how to deal with drawdowns in the market, because there's multiple ways to deal with that. Most people just don't do anything. They assume their financial advisor is going to do so, but he's home sleeping because he has a long-term plan, and he knows that as long as you don't need your money and you live long enough, this drawdown is going to become irrelevant. So he'll go play golf and won't answer your phone call while this is happening. The real issue is the uncertainty. And these are uncertain times.
Boy, I guess, right?
We had the pandemic. That wasn't planned, wasn't expected. And certainly what appears to be a highly coordinated central bank and government response has never been seen in our lifetimes. Well, it's not just our lifetime. How about it has never been seen,
ever,
period.
Ever. This has never happened before, correct. We're watching history unfold here, even here.
Yeah, well, I kind of like my daily history as opposed to stuff the government doles out.
Right.
So there's different ways to deal with risk. Some of it is, it used to be called portfolio insurance. You can hedge it with futures. You can do a short strategy where you think you've got something that's going up and you, on the opposite side, something's going down, and you put them both together trying to kind of even it out. You just go to cash. You can raise cash. That's typically what we do. Our dynamic portfolio can short. Yeah, but as we've mentioned in the past, when you are betting on further downside, market falls happen faster than market rises, if you hadn't noticed.
Yeah, always. Always. That's like they say, it's the, you take the stairs up, but you take the elevator down. That's the way it works.
So when you are short the market, you're betting on lower prices, and you sell something high first, and then you buy something back later at a lower price. So you still bought low, sell high. You just do it in reverse order. When you're using exchange traded funds or mutual funds to do that, they're called inverse funds. And there are additional risks with those because they are usually using some sort of derivative strategy, which is very volatile on top of market volatility, and it adds expenses. You're going to go look at the expenses, and you'll see they're substantially higher than what you're used to paying in an S&P 500 fund, for instance, or even a NASDAQ fund, which is more expensive, but it's nothing compared to having an inverse fund. But the biggest issue is how do we measure something that we didn't see coming?
Well, that is truly the hard part. It's the uncertainty that does inject the largest amount of questionable returns into your portfolio, because by definition we don't know what those are. Like you said, Don, there's a number of ways to hedge against the known risks of the market, a market decline, a bear market. There are things to do about that, but like you said, what do you do when a pandemic strikes out of nowhere? And then what do you do when the world reacts to that by saying, well, let's just close everything? That's nothing that anyone could see coming. And that requires a much greater level of flexibility to deal with what actually does occur, instead of, like we said, hiding behind that pie chart and saying, well, I'm just going to wait until this is over and pretend none of this is going on. I don't care how bad it gets, and I don't care how long it takes. That's just all I'm going to do. And we just don't think that's a proper response. You have to respond as best you can to things as they unfold, because it can take a very long time for anything to revert to the mean, to come back to any kind of level of normalcy.
There you go, using one of those big fancy finance words.
Yeah, I slipped out.
Reverting to the mean. So basically things get extended to the high side, then, you know, everybody's too optimistic or they're too pessimistic. And what Perry just referred to is that over time, and sometimes a relatively short time, that extension of exuberance will right itself. It's kind of like, well, I've never been in a sailboat, but I understand how they stay afloat, and they tip over in a... Somebody's going to call me and tell him I'm wrong, but sailboaters love windy days. And a really windy day, you'll see them, particularly in the sailboat races, they're leaning over an angle of 45. Guys are hanging out the other side of the boat to keep it from taking on water, you know, balance it out. They've got this big ballast deep down in the underneath. Well, once the wind goes away, that big ballast drops back down to center. That's reversion to the mean. And the boat's standing upright. It's, you know, it's on an even keel. Well, the market kind of does that. It's just that we handle it differently, particularly when our account is of significant size relative to our finances. And that brings in the emotional response, because in reality, we live with uncertainty all the time. You don't think about it, but you get in your car to drive to Costco. You have absolutely no certainty that you're going to be able to drive your car home, because you could get hit by somebody else who, like this dad who let his 13-year-old kid drive the truck and killed them and everybody in the other car. We don't know that's going to happen. That's an uncertainty issue. It's unexpected. You get gobsmacked, and there your plans have changed. And what do? You figure out how to deal with what is in front of you, and that's what we have to do with the markets. Now, typically, financial advisors are brainwashed to look at long-term averages and say, well, we lived through World War II. Well, you and I didn't. You know, but if you look at the market, you can say, well, somebody did, and the country survived. We lived through the Great Depression. Well, you and I didn't do that either. But the country survived, and so the theory is it doesn't matter if the market goes down. The country's going to survive, and you will too. Just close your eyes and, you know, go watch TV, go to a movie, go back to bed, go grocery shopping, go do. Well, that's pretty expensive.
That's a dangerous foray. And I head into the grocery store, but that is what people expect. That is what most brokers expect their clients to do. Do nothing. Call me and let me tell you everything is going to turn out okay. And the biggest problem with that is you know the majority of our clients are retirees and they're spending their retirement nest eggs now. They don't need a big hole shot in that by an unexpected event that no one reacts to and then get told, well, just wait till it comes back. It'll be okay. It's like, no, they're retired now and they need to let that money work for them now, not 20 years from now. And that's where we have the one of the big disagreements with that with the pie chart.
Yeah, so the issue of managing risk in the market really started developing tools in the 70s. This is the advent of shrinking computers. And by the time we got into the 80s, people had a PC on their desk. IBM missed that one. IBM said, who would ever need a computer at home?
It makes no sense. You know, yeah, that's never gonna fly.
That's when computers they took up an entire building in the University of San Diego at La Jolla. One of my high school buddies worked there, and the whole building was a computer. Well, IBM's view was computers are really big. Nobody's ever going to buy one in their household budget. So we'll pass on what that Bill Gates guy,
I think he was there. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll pass on that. That was a bad call for them. They tried to emulate his program, and I forget what it was. I had it. I never figured out how it worked. Bill Gates had the wing ding that did work. Anyway, uncertainty is something we have to adapt to, and that's basically what your choice is in the market. Are you going to do something about this situation, or are you going to sit on your hands? And when you do something about it, it's kind of like driving a car and getting a flat tire. Do you keep driving, pretending that everything's still okay, or do you get off the road and call AAA to come fix your flat? Been there, done that.
There you go.
Well, you can do the same thing in the market. And maybe you can't fix the flat. Your spare, well, you know, now you're traveling without a spare. So what we did, this happened with Linda and me when she was moving to Kansas for medical treatment, and we had a blowout just north of Tri-Cities. And I'm going to give a plug for Les Schwab. We called Les Schwab and said, I've been buying tires from you forever in Kitsap County, but I'm stuck here and need new tires. They kept two guys for an hour for us to get there after closing, an hour after closing, so that we could buy tires from them. I mean, that is that's a great tire company in my experience. But be that, they're not paying for the commercials, so we should take ours.
Yeah, we are up against a break here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar scheduled for Saturday, April 2nd, 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and give the registration link a click, and you will get a link back in an email. And on April 2nd, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. We'll be able to show you the charts that we're looking at, the things that we're thinking about. And we always have plenty of time to get to all of the viewers' questions, and we always get a lot of great questions. So it's a really good time to get a second opinion on anything in your portfolio or anything going on in the market or the economy. Again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. We would love to talk to you here this afternoon. If you have a question for us this afternoon, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. I was thinking about that as Bump. I'm reflecting back when I was in elementary and junior high school. My two younger brothers used to fight a lot. And I'm sure you've had kids, and any of you have had kids, and you've had more than one. You've come in and, what are you two fighting over? Well, he did it. He started it. No, she started it. No, he's, you know, basically it's, I'm going to get even with whatever it is they did. And that behavior happens to persist in the adult world when it comes to investing.
It does.
It's called get even itis.
and it can be seriously dangerous.
So get even itis works against long-term investors because the purchase price of an investment is irrelevant to today's decision.
Let that sink in for a second. I mean, that's a huge sentence right there. Once you make that purchase, once you own a security, what you do with it after that shouldn't have anything to do with what you paid for it. That decision is the next decision in the process, which is going to be made on, you know, what the momentum, is it moving and what direction and how fast? And that's got nothing to do with what you paid for it. But the two get mixed up all the time.
The prior decision buying it is sunk cost. I mean, it's done. It's a
over.
Done deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's history. Already had a flat tire, got a new one on. Well, I still have this flat tire. It's not working like I thought I would. But the inability to let go of this get-even-itis holds those dollars hostage, preventing you from taking advantage of something that is actually working instead of shrinking. Now, we're not going to get into the tax issues. I mean, different states treat these things differently, and
right,
the Fed
right.
is. The issue is, how do you look at your capital on an after-tax basis? Is that the way you spend your money? Is that the way you invest it? If you are an after-tax investor, then drawdown in the market is not your priority. You're going to wait, particularly if it happens shortly after you bought it.
As always, right?
Yeah, that's right. One of our physician clients has told me repeatedly over the decades that we've worked together, he said, the reason I hire you is because when I was doing this myself, every time I bought something, it went backwards. And I decided I needed help. I guess he's got a profession and career. He has to deal with that, worried about these things. And we've all done that. If you've bought investments on your own any length of time at all, you've bought one and it looked great. You did a lot of research. You bought it, and the next day it was higher, and you think, hallelujah, I'm going to make money this
got
time.
One. Yeah, got a winner here.
And until Friday showed up, and it was a terrible Friday. Maybe it's terrible Thursdays. It doesn't matter which day it was. And then it starts going down, and then you say, well, but I did my research. Had a good chart. In fact, Charles on Fox Business, he recommended the stock. He had a whole segment on it. He had a couple of analysts talking about it, and they all had great stories. How come it's going backwards? You ever been there, done that? Yeah, I'm sure you have.
you get that in that frame of mind. Wait a minute. It has to go up. It's got to go up. I know it's going to go up, but it's not going up is the only part of that you should be looking at. If it's not happening, you need to recognize that and then get ready to make a decision just based on that part alone.
Well, what about, but it was a great, great company with a long history and products galore that the whole world buys. I'm thinking of GE. Everybody knows
sure.
who GE. So just assume that you finally had some money. You bought GE in March of 2017. You paid $2.40 a share. But the future of GE, I mean, what in your house can't be almost replaced by GE? Okay, they don't make furniture. But if it's got electricity attached to it, they probably make it
They've
in some
it.
Department.
Yep.
They make jet engines. You fly somewhere, the odds are you're on a GE product. You're getting there with GE. So you buy it, and immediately it drops a little bit, and it's trading at 145. Now, that's not a 50% drop, but 40% in 9 months, what's the loss? I mean, big deal, right? You're a buy-and-hold long-term investor. Well, the honest answer here is that when you bought it, neither did you nor anyone else know the future and what it was going to hold for General Electric.
And no one can. That's the key. No one can know, and it doesn't matter, again, what has gone on before. It doesn't matter how long GE had been on the S&P 500. It doesn't matter how long GE has been increasing their dividend. It doesn't matter. All that matters is what's going on now, and you have to dial that into the decision and just completely forget about all that stuff at the other end.
Yeah, you mentioned the S&P. At one time, it was the largest company in the S&P 500.
There you go.
And as a big blue chip company, you look around for a rival. You'd had to look a hard.
There was nothing. Yeah, why be worried about buying GE? There's not any risk there. This is always going to keep going up. Always the case.
So if you got overwhelmed with the case of get evenitis back in 2018, and you wanted to wait for your shares to get back to even, well, they're trading at 92 today. They're down 62% from your original purchase price. And this is the point that we are trying to make here, is that when you have, when you put money into an asset in the market, one, you're making a timing decision. You're deciding this is a good time at this price to buy it.
Correct.
And then what you assume, there's never going to be a good time to sell it? Is that what you assume? So you quit looking until you're down 62% at $92 here in this case. No, the point is, when it wasn't working early on, the facts had changed. And whatever you use to make your assumption to buy, the timing decision to buy, should have been reviewed and made a timing decision to say, this isn't working, preserve capital, find something else. Now, maybe it turned out to be a short-term drop. In this case, it didn't. But a short-term drop, and you say, well, I didn't need to get out of it. Well, you can buy it back. But once it's not working, what you don't know is if it's going to turn into another case like GE, where'd we start at in 2017? We're 5 years downstream, and we're minus 62%. Somewhere along there, I think there was probably a good time to preserve capital. There were other things to buy.
And that's the key. Yeah. You don't have to make it all work with the same stock that you bought or the same ETF that you purchased. The idea is once it's not working, change to something that is. And there's no guarantee it's going to, of course, but you're going to have a better opportunity in something that's trending up than in something like GE that was trending down and continued to trend down. And all you're doing is saying, well, then I'm just going to lose as much as I have to because I'm betting on GE no matter what. And we always say, you know, you never get married to anything you buy, and you really need to have a sell process in place prior to making that purchase. You need to know what would make me sell this. And you have to already have that lined out.
That's true. If you say, but I'm a long-term buy and hold investor. Okay. So you're happy being down 62%, right?
I mean, that's what you were looking for, right? Yeah. So
because you're not ready to sell it yet. It shouldn't be, I'm not ready to sell it because I'm not even yet. That's not a healthy financial decision. If you're really long-term, you buy stuff and never sell it, well, then it doesn't matter if it goes down a lot. You don't care. Well, in theory.
In theory. Anyway. Everybody cracks. Yeah, everybody cracks, and usually at the worst possible time and the point where they can least afford it, and that's when they'll go ahead and bail out at the bottom. And like you said, Don, you've already done a huge amount of damage to the capital that you had to invest because you let yourself get married to that one holding and you were going to try to get even in it instead of saying, well, let's move to something that is going up and let's get the portfolio back moving in the right direction. And we don't care what those securities are. We just want to know that they are moving up.
So, well, then the next problem comes, and that is that you buy something else and the entire environment is changing and everything is going down. And so you've got a couple of these bad trades in a row, and that's going to happen. The question is, do you have a process? Are you following your process? The market will come to your process, whether you're a growth investor, value investor, momentum investor, a GARP investor. You have to have a process. And if you have a process, there are periods of time where it doesn't matter how disciplined you are. The market doesn't like your process, but it will change because it always does. It is not a stable animal. It's a very insecure animal because it's responding to human emotions. That's what drives prices.
Almost always. And that's important to remember, that it doesn't matter what process you're using. There's going to be points of time when your process is out of step with the market. And that's when it's even more important to really be disciplined. Don't start changing everything you do in the midst of a chaotic period. You need to hang in there and give it time to work.
Well, let's go ahead and take our break. We're short a few seconds, but we can,
no problem,
we can adjust on the other side.
It's called adapting. We're good at that. So let's go ahead. I'd like to remind everyone that we have a weekly email newsletter called The Week in Review. If you'd like to sign up for that, send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. Goes out most Mondays, and it's a look at current economic news. And we do try to let you know that some of those things are important, and some of them really aren't. It gives you a good look at that. You can sign up for that by sending an email to help@iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we'd love to talk to you. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, when we go on to break, we're talking about things that you need to think about on a continuing basis. You make a timing decision when you decide to buy, and you make a timing decision when you buy to sell. Everybody's a market timer. The claiming that market timing is bad for your fiscal health is hogwash, because everybody makes those decisions. It's a good time at this price, I buy. It's a good time at this price, I sell. It's always a timing decision. But one of the things that is changing, part of it hasn't changed, and that is how our economy grows, and it grows because of discretionary spending. 30% of the population, the wealthiest part of our population, are really the ones who have the discretionary spending that keeps our economy afloat.
Correct. That's where the money, and that's where the spending comes from, right?
The rest of the population, half of them, basically get by. Because on paper, they're bankrupt. They've been surviving this last 2 years. We've had a lot of government largesse, which has, pardon the pun, but papered over the paper problem.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And it did allow a lot of people to get caught up. I mean, that was free money that they didn't have to earn. It just showed up in their bank accounts. And some of them used it to pay down debt. Some of them have saved some of the money. Some of them got to be able to buy things they needed that they hadn't been able to pay afford before. But half the population is still pretty dicey when it comes to how are they going to survive if they don't have a job and regular employment. And then there's 20% of the population that doesn't have $400 for an emergency. They're hurting all the time. That they really are on survival mode and have been bailed out with for a while. But the discretionary income is a major issue as far as, is the economy growing? Is there hope for the economy and the stock market? Are profits going to be good or not going forward? And the forecast for stocks or for corporate earnings is lower than it has been in a while. And that's not a surprise. It's been in the news, though. Coming into January, people were ignoring it. I mean, we had a really good earnings report period in January and February, where, you know, got 6 weeks of reporting. But that was fourth quarter. We still had a lot of government money in people's and business pocketbooks to be spent, and it was being spent. That's good. But the ETF that tracks discretionary sector is XLY. And from peak to trough, it's down almost 24%. Now, this last week, we had a really strong rally in the market, and it's not down that much anymore. It is only down from peak to, let's call it, Friday's peak, only 15%.
Okay.
So it's recovered some. The question now is, will this continue, or as it did in February, reach a level where it chops around and turns upside down
again? Just rolls over again, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know that, but right now, while there's some excitement about the strength of last week, there's not enough confirmation to assume that we're going back to our January highs.
And that's everybody, important. Yeah, it's really important to see that even a good week, a few good days in a row can look like, well, we're in recovery. We've got a turnaround here. And that's not enough to do it, especially if you're in the midst of a steep decline. There are going to be those big up days. Those big up days usually happen during a down market, during a pull down. That's when you get the big up days. So you really have to watch those and not get fooled and say, well, that's it. We're all in. Let's just move back into the market with everything we've got and head back into the higher risk areas, because that's where I'm going to get the biggest return to recover, only to find, whoops, it was only a good week and the downtrend was back in place.
And if you just want to know how bad things have been, you get onto Yahoo and type in the ticker ARK, and then you'll find there's some letters that you can choose among for other funds. The ARK family of funds had phenomenal runs through the COVID recovery, but have had disaster in the stock prices since then. And people just aren't aware of how much decimation has occurred on the technology side of the market. And when you start looking, you say, man, this is really tough. Yeah. Is this ever going to end? Well, yeah, it is going to end. We just don't know if it's going to end at a lower level or not. We need to be somewhat adaptive here in this process. The Fed has to deal with inflation. Well, let me come. I kind of get sidetracked here. I'm come back to this rally that we had this last week. The two issues that seem to be responsible for it. One is there's been a lot of talk that the Russian war is going to come to a quick end. That nobody's saying who's going to win here, but that it's not going to last very long. So as far as Wall Street's concerned, it's a done deal. Quit worrying about it. That's the kind of the official after hours. Let's have a cocktail and conversation. And can you believe what's happening? Oh no, I mean, it's never going to happen. It's not going to happen. Yes, it is. No, yeah, nuts. Let's just get back to work. It's going to go away, and it's not that serious. Okay, well, a lot of us think it is serious, but we don't know. They don't know either, but the big guys on Wall Street are saying this isn't going to last very long. So any announcement that there are, I got my quote mark fingers in the air, a peace talk underway, the market celebrates, goes, hallelujah, this is coming to an end, until it doesn't the next day. The other reason for the market rallied was Chairman Powell gave his speech, and he said, we are going to raise interest rates 7 times this year. Previously, the debate was, will they do them 3 or maybe 4? And he said, no, it'll be 7. We're going to raise it at every meeting.
Yeah.
So expect more. Now, rising rates are bad for bonds. Bond investors said, hallelujah, we'll buy more bonds at these lower rates. It made no sense, but that's what they did, and the market went up. Higher rates make growth stocks and tech stocks worth less money. That didn't matter. They went up. It was like we're living in Never Never Land.
It was a classic bad news is good news. You know, everything he just said is bad for us, and we're going to buy more. So it's hard to figure out.
And then we turn around and we're dealing with inflation. Anybody know that? Yeah, it's somebody. If you listen to the news anywhere, somebody mentioned inflation. Yes, it's a problem. The biggest problem nobody really wants to talk about is food inflation. The food chain is quite dicey at the present time. Globally, this is difficult. You take a look at your local grocery store, they've got about 72 hours worth of stuff on their shelf. Any major disruption in that supply chain is going to cause panic to clean out whatever is left. that's probably the biggest risk we face right now globally, because the amount of food-related product that comes out of Russia and Ukraine is huge. And you don't think you're buying anything from Russia. Yeah, because, you know, you go, where's the label? Made in China, made in China. I've never seen one said made in Ukraine or made in Russia that I can rank. Well, we've got some of those little stackable dolls. So, you know, they probably were. But what you don't think about is your farmer needs fertilizer. Guess who's a major exporter of the raw materials for fertilizer? Russia and Ukraine. Farmers are having a hard time sourcing what they need for fertilizer for this growing season. That means prices at the farmer level will be higher. Guess what happens next?
They eat the losses and our prices stay the same. Is that what happens?
Okay.
I guarantee you
you're back in Never Never.
Yeah, that is not what happens. Yeah. Everybody's prices go up.
Yeah, the food processor, he's got higher prices. Plus, he's got to transport the stuff. Gasoline and diesel cost more money. He's got to get it to the packager. The packager's got to get it to the distributor. The distributor's got to get it to regional distribution. It's got to get out to the stores, all of whom require fossil fuel to get it done. The entire world works on fossil fuel. There is no alternative at the present time. So the other reason that the markets went up was that fuel prices, well, actually not fuel at retail level, but at the crude oil level,
right.
Softened a little bit over the last 2 weeks. And that brought optimism back into the equity side. Corporations can make money again because gas prices will be lower. I'm not sure. It takes a while to work that through. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But what we're seeing and what the Fed is saying is that, well, the Fed says we are going to kill inflation. Inflation at the producer price level is at 10%, and we are going to raise interest rates 0.25% and just knock the legs out from underneath that stool. Yeah, well, that doesn't work. That's why they're saying 7 times. But the big problem, according to Mr. Powell, the Fed is blaming inflation on rising wages. That's right, folks. All you out there in the listening audience, if you've had a raise lately, you are responsible for our inflation problem. It's your fault. Yeah, that takes me back to my brothers fighting. They'd turn around and say, no, we didn't. He started it over there. I know we're not fighting with him, but he's the reason we're fighting. Anyway, that's Powell. Wages are a response to inflation. They are not the driver of inflation. And we've said before that we don't think there's anybody in the administration that passed Econ 101, and that's just one more reason to believe it.
And we can see, you can see just by watching, it's been posted everywhere. If you happen to be a reader of The Economy, there are no wage increases that have stayed ahead of inflation. Everyone is still losing their purchasing power, even with a recent wage increase. So they're trailing, not leading the inflationary charge.
Yeah, so if you had a wage increase, the problem is that inflation's greater. And so when you look at wage increases as real increases, it's after inflation adjusted, and they're not keeping up with prices. We are probably going to be behind the eight curve on this issue for some extended period of time, which really begs the question, how is the market going to reach new highs with this kind of endemic financial problem when you're pressing households and business budgets on how to stay afloat? Can we keep the lights on? We can't go to a movie because we can't afford to fill the tank to get back and forth again and still pay for the high price of popcorn or whatever we're going to buy there. I mean, it's expensive to go to a movie theater. Even AMC, who runs, I think, the largest chain of movie theaters in the country, has decided that the theater business is not good business. They invested a ton of money, thanks to the meme investors raising the stock prices this last year, in, I believe it was a gold company.
Correct. Gold and silver. That's what they are diversified out of the theater business into the gold and silver business. So take that as, you know, what you will, but they're not investing in their current business model. Let's say that. So it's going to be tough going.
Well, now there is a CEO who has looked at the facts and said, this isn't a good business to be in.
We need to be moving on. Absolutely.
Let's find something else. So they are reevaluating based on current market conditions instead of what was a hoped for recovery. But the theater business has been in decline.
Everything changed
for some time.
Sure. Yeah. We need to get out of here now. We're in our last break of the afternoon here. I'd like to remind everyone that on April 2nd, we do have our next market update webinar. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. Give it a click, and you can register quite easily there, and you'll be good to go for Saturday, April 2nd, 9 a.m. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, we have plenty of time to get your call on the board. Give us a call here at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Gone are the dark. Well, there it is. I hope we've accomplished our goal for today, is that you can see clearly now.
Right. Clearer, anyway.
Well, you look at the market and say, man, nothing to worry about. It's all going to work out. So I mentioned in the last segment, people don't understand the kind of damage has been done in the market, because the index numbers don't look all that bad. That's a handful of stocks which Wall Street wants to protect to keep people from panicking over what's happening in the market overall. Anyway, I mentioned ARK. And I pulled up ARK, which focuses on innovation businesses. And from the March low of 2020 to the March high of 2021, it's up 383%. Now, let me guarantee you that most of the people who bought ARK did so after it was up probably 300.
Correct.
And they thought, man, you know, this is going to let me retire. Well, since then, so that'd be March of 21 to the bottom of last week, it was down 67%, give or take a fraction.
And that's a big hit.
Yeah, minus 67. But you're a long-term investor. Fear not. You know, we'll sell something that's working and buy some more of it when we rebalance your account next quarter.
That's it. And that's a classic buying pattern also, that the bulk of the money came in at some of the highest prices that that the fund traded at. That's when popularity gets really widespread. There's a lot of press out there about, wow, look at these huge gains. Well, the huge gains have already occurred. And that's when the big dollars come in, and that's when the reversion to the mean again comes.
Yeah, Cathie Wood shows up on the front cover of Bloomberg magazine.
Yep.
And that kind of press draws in a lot of people. Well, and so now they're underwater. The rally, I mean, at the bottom of last week, you were down 67%. The rally did help some. Now you're only down 59 over the last year. So, I mean, it is what it is. Somewhere along the line, the point of our prior segment was, there's a point in there somewhere that the time was right to walk away from that investment. And there are better things to do along the way. Now, the market has had deterioration in it. If you look at the Russell 3000, for instance, which is kind of a proxy for the U.S. market, it's down 11% from the high, but more than 60% of the companies that are in the index are down 20% or more. 30% of them are down 40% or more from their 52-week highs.
Right.
This, even though the index hasn't been that discouraging, underneath the market has not been healthy. This has not been an easy place just to park money and think everything will be okay. And you get a little bit discouraged and walk and say, I'm going to put the money in the bank because that won't happen to me. That's right. And you won't get back in. I talked to those people.
We've seen them. They come in like that. And, you know what? We got out of the market in 2008, haven't been back in since.
Still there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So bear markets are confusing. I mean, the market on Monday was down 3%. The NASDAQ was down almost 4%. On Wednesday, S&P's up 3%. NASDAQ almost gained 4%. But it's not like 2020 March of 2020 when it was minus 8 plus 5, minus 5, minus 10 plus 9, minus 12 plus 6, minus 5, all one day after another. You want to talk about confusing. These conditions make for difficult markets. This is what we're talking about, uncertainty, in an earlier segment today. The uncertainty of what the Fed was going to do, they've now clarified that to some extent, and the fact that that uncertainty was gone caused a couple days of celebration in the market. But the uncertainty of what's going to happen in Russia and Ukraine remains a drag and a possible black swan with regard to market pricing. So what's your process? If you are a buy and hold investor, you should just not listen to the news and do not check your portfolio. Wait until the day that you decided you were going to need the money. If that's for college education, when your kids turn 21 and they're now three, you got a lot of time to not look at it. If you're 65 and you're retiring next year, well, you're going to need the money next year. Maybe you shouldn't retire. In fact, a lot of retirees from the 2020 pandemic have found their way back into the workforce. One, they found what with inflation, it's a little hard for a pension to keep up. And two, a lot of them said, you know, this staying home, that's no fun.
not quite what I had in mind. That's right.
Yeah. So the issue, we're not in a bear market. Are we? We're chopping around. I made a new word that I put in the email for updating our website, choppity. It's choppity, a choppity chop market.
Yep, it is. Yeah, that's a good description. Choppity chop.
And these are the kinds of things that can be quite scary. Volatility gets out of hand, basically. And that's when volatility is high, when it reaches extremes, that's when markets are falling. And then we're going to use your term, Perry, reverts to the mean, yep. Comes back to a more normal level. We get some recovery and the prices begin to go up. Now, what we don't have is a lot of retail buying. We don't have a lot of money pushing stock prices higher. My momentum scans are light. They're just not a lot there. In fact, I run two different scans. I run a set of seven scans for stocks and seven scans for exchange-traded funds every day. And on the exchange-traded funds, two of those scans, the results were zero. There was nothing in the market that those scans would pick up. And the buy scan and the sell scan, now the universe of ETFs on the software we use, which is tc2000.com, is somewhere around 2,400. And I'm looking for exchange traded funds that there are either buyers pushing these prices up or sellers driving these prices down. Out of 2,400 funds, I had 12 in each category. That is an absence of activity.
Not a strong trend in the up direction. That's for sure. And that's part, like you said, Don, that's part of the problem of why a good week like last week in the market can be a head fake in that there's not a lot of follow through here. There's not a lot of strength to support that, especially nothing that points to getting to new highs.
Well, you need people who are excited about the future, because that's why they invest in stocks.
Yep.
I'm going to make money over time. There's that timing word again. I'm putting money in now to take it out later at a higher price. That's optimism. And 85% of the time, that's the way the market works. It's just there's a lot of choppity chop between time one buy and time two sell. You don't know how that's going to work out. So you either go to sleep or you pay attention, because you have rules and you're going to follow the rules along the way. Nobody has a crystal ball. And history, which is how most people build their portfolios, tells you nothing about the future.
Correct. It can show you how economic relationships reacted to each other in the past. it's got nothing to do with what's going to come up in the future. So they can be interesting. You can look for correlations. You can look for the way things reacted, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen again. It's always different going forward. It's always a different economy. It's always different pressures from the rest of the world. And you can't just say, well, this happened the last time. It looked like this. So I think it's going to happen the same way again. That just doesn't happen out there.
Well, that's why anytime you look at a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund or a financial manager's returns, at the bottom of it, it's going to say past performance has nothing to do with your future. It's not predictive. Whatever success a manager had in the past has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not that success can be repeated going forward, because
Correct.
It may be that that good performance number was just simply being in a good market. The real issue is how much protection did you get in the down markets, because preserving capital is more important than beating the market in the long run.
Sure.
But where we are, we're not in a bear market. We are in a correction, and it's been a long time since we've had an extended correction. And time in this market is moving faster than it has in the past. If you look at something like the Great Financial Crisis, well, that recovery was 5 years. We go back and look at what happened with pandemic. We had massive intervention globally by central bankers and governments, and we got a correction that we got a bear market that corrected in a matter of months. That's not normal, and that's what many people are expecting to happen here. That's an unrealistic expectation.
Yep.
While businesses are struggling to figure out how to pass on cost. We are coming up to the end of our hour. If you want to talk to us during the week, it's 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. You want a free look at your portfolio. Our podcasts or the radio shows show up on our website, iriradio.com. The video tab will give you the most recent webinars. Actually, it gives you the last couple of years of webinars. You just keep paging down and going forward on it. You'll learn a lot. None of them are repetitive. We repeat a few concepts, but every one of those webinars is unique. You will learn stuff by watching them again. Again, you want to talk to us during the week, we are available, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. We do take your calls.